Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jeb Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicing through topics every single week and jabbing you through daily dose of UFC. And we are fresh off of UFC 316. It did not disappoint. There were some downers. There were some highs, some lows, some crazy things, some new champions, some retaining champions. We're here to talk about it all on today's episode as we will be recapping all the action from UFC 316 and talking about what is next for each and every one of the fighters. I'm looking very forward to that. Also, I'm going to be talking a bit about Money in the Bank. I wasn't able to watch it as I was hanging out with my buddy and watching UFC 316 at the same time. But nonetheless, we will recap it and talk about what went down. I have three new movie reviews, some new UFC fights. We got a lot of fun, exciting stuff coming at you guys. We got episode 200 coming up here in the next week or so, and I'm honestly torn about what to do for it. I feel like I should get a special guest of some kind. I don't know what to do, but I'm going to be working on that. So episode 200 should be out before the end of June. Actually, it will be up before the end of June. What am I saying? But for this week, we have this episode, and we're also going to be previewing UFC Atlanta. A lot of fun stuff ahead for the Surprise Jab Podcast. Well, let's not delay. Let's get right on into it with our new UFC matchups. That's right, new UFC matchups that have been announced. We have four new ones, three are official, and one is probably going to be announced, but it was just broken today. So first off, we have a woman's, flyweight matchup going down at UFC Atlanta. So this is a short notice bout, I'm assuming. Yes, Vanessa Demopoulos replaces Teresa Bleda to take on Jamie Lynn Horth. Vanessa, 5-4 in the UFC, 11-7 professionally. She is gotten a win over Sam Hughes, Emily Decote, Jin Yu Frey. She is part of the unranked women's strawweight crew. Her opponent, Jamie Lynn Horth, 2-2 in the UFC, wins over Haley Cohen and Ivana Petrovic. She is 7-2 professionally. Should be an interesting matchup. It's 50-50. Honestly, I might lean Vanessa Demopoulos. It is short notice, even though I don't think it matters. It was broken last week. It honestly is what it is. But here's another one for you. UFC Atlanta. Malcolm Wellmaker getting a short notice fight. This fight was made 5 days ago. I am recording this on the 9th, so this was made on the 4th. Well, Malcolm Wellmaker taking on Chris Muatino. If no one remembers Chris Muatino fought Sean O'Malley on short notice at UFC. Oh my goodness, which UFC was it? I think it was the UFC 264 back when McGregor fought. It was the last McGregor card when he fought Dustin Poirier. Yeah, UFC 264. And just put on a crazy showing. O'Malley absolutely beat him senseless. 230 significant strikes to like 70, and he just kept on fighting. After that, he had one more UFC fight and just couldn't get it done. I don't even remember who he lost to. Might have been Daniel Marcos or something. He lost to kind of a nobody, and the UFC cut him, all right? Since then, four straight wins, all of them finishes, and now he's back to take on the undefeated 9-0 Malcolm Wellmaker. Malcolm Wellmaker, 1-0 in the UFC, just destroyed Cameron Sabin. His UFC debut, just not even close. So we'll see if Chris can get it done. You know, he's 32 years old. Malcolm is 28 years old. I'll be curious. Actually, Malcolm's 30, I think, by now. I think his birthday just happened. I think he just, actually, might be 31. Actually, 31 years old or something. But these two are pretty similar in age. I'm curious to see how this one goes. Most people would go with Malcolm Wellmaker, would be the obvious choice. But Chris Muatino, always fun, always action-packed. And we'll see if he can rally and get back in the win column. Now, here's a fun one for you for UFC Chicago 319, the pay-per-view. Alexander the Great, a Pernatus, little stupid nickname, takes on Chase the Dream Hooper. Chase Hooper, 5-0 now. 5-fight win streak at lightweight. He's taken out Jim Miller, Clay Guida, Jordan Leavitt. He's been on a tear, and now he gets yet another step closer to a ranked opponent. I personally think he's ready for the rankings, but what do I know? Clearly, what do I know? Not much. Not much, it would appear, as he takes on Alexander Hernandez. Alexander, I don't even know if he's coming off a win. He might have beaten Kurt Holobow last time out. I mean, this is a guy who knocked out Benil Dariush in his debut, and since then, ain't done much. Ain't done much, to say the least, so I'll be curious to see how this goes. I feel like Chase Hooper should take him down, submit him within the first two rounds, but it's MMA. You never know. Like, honestly, I thought Chase Hooper, after his last win, would have been given someone close to the rankings, etc. Grant Dawson, maybe this is a closer step to the rankings, actually. Maybe they view Alexander Hernandez as a closer step to the rankings, but Chase, he's a great prospecting talent. I mean, dude's 25 years old. absolutely killing it. I'll be curious to see how that one goes. And then the most exciting matchup that we have had announced. I'm pumped for this one. It's unofficially announced, but it's going to be announced. Men's flyweight action as Manel Cape, the pullout king. Son of a gun, this dude just cannot fight. He's been pulled out of his fight against Brandon Royval at UFC 317, end of the month. Stepping in to replace him is a man we're going to talk about later on the pod, Joshua Van. That's right. If you didn't know, Joshua Van, great knockout on UFC 316, and now he's taking on the number one contender in the division. This is just absolutely crazy. Josh Van, 23 years old, just, oh, absolutely love him. I loved him from when I first saw his UFC debut, and now looking at him now, it is just wonderful to see. So that should be a great fight. I'm very curious to see how it goes with all fights, I say, but, I mean, Brandon Royval is pretty skilled, so Joshua Van is going to need to level up his game if he wants to win and become the number one contender. Mention that Joshua Van starts off the year not even in the rankings, ends the year as the number one contender, maybe even getting a title shot. If he beats Brandon Royval, give him Alexander Pantoa. Winner of Alexander Pantoa and Kai Kerfetz, whether Kai Kerfetz could pull off an upset, but those are all your official new UFC fights. A lot of fun stuff with all of that. Now, I'll tell you something else that's fun, and that is movies. That's right, on the Surprise Shed podcast. We don't just talk about MMA. We don't just talk about WWE, NFL, NBA. No, no, no. We talk about movies, and I've watched three movies as of late, and I'm here to give you a review on each and every one of them, starting off with the first one, Black Hawk Down. That's right, this movie. So freaking good. So freaking good. Came out in 2001, 2.5 hours, directed by Ridley Scott. I should have known it was going to be good right from that. Got 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 76% on Rotten Tomatoes. And this cast, insane. Josh Hartnett, Eric Bana, Ewan McGregor, Tom Hardy, Orlando Bloom, William Fichtner, Ty Burrell. You also have, Nicholas Coster-Waldau? It's Jamie from Game of Thrones. He's in this. Jeremy Piven is in this movie. Sam Shepard. This cast is out of this world. Amazing cast. And the entire movie is about the Black Hawk Down mission, which went down in Somalia in 1993. And it is one of the best war movies I've ever seen. It may be the best war movie that I've ever seen. It is emotional. It is gripping. It is so real. The realism to this is insane. And when someone gets hurt or injured, you can just see the graphics of it are just eerie. And it is, oh man, it's so good. It is just so, so good. Gripping. Like, you just can't take your eyes off the screen. You feel like you're in the war. It gives you a different perspective of war. I'm actually glad I didn't watch this, you know, right before not knowing what to do with my life, because I might have joined the military, you know. And despite how terrible the military looks, just the camaraderie, and just, you're just with your brothers out there. You're with your brothers, and you live with your brothers, you die with your brothers, and man, it is just so freaking good. And I think my buddy's father was actually in this. He was on this mission. I think it was called, like, Ghost Serpent or something. I don't know, but man, it's just awful what they had to go through. 19 American soldiers died. 19 Americans died in this, which is just awful to even think about. But yeah, the cast, utterly crazy. It's crazy this movie came out in 2001, and it literally, it came out January 2002. That is actually insane, actually. It came out in 2002, January, which means 9/11 had just happened, and this was set to be released. Wow. That's actually crazy. I wonder if that was timed. So it makes you kind of think if it was timed and they wanted more people to enlist. I don't know. I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. What? I'm not saying any of that. No. But yeah, Black Hawk Down, highly recommended. Highly recommended. I'd maybe watch it again. I want to watch some other war movies. I really do want to watch some other war movies. But 4.5 on Google for reviews. Like I said, Ridley Scott, amazing at what he does. The cast, the overview, I mean, you just know the whole spiel. Watch it on Netflix, I think I watched it on. People also search for 12 Strong, We Were Soldiers, The Outpost, Zero Dark Thirty. Yeah, those are some similar movies. But yeah, it's all about the Battle of Mogadishu. Ooh, look at this. We actually get a little Wikipedia thing. You get a little bonus Wikipedia thing about Black Hawk Down. That's right, it lasted 3 to 4 days in October. Actually, I think it lasts from the 3rd to 4th of October is what it's saying right there. of course, the Somalia terrorist organization or whatever was in, they had the entire movie premises, actually, I should probably say, around this military mission to go capture these prisoners and bring them back. And they're in this market, this town square. I can't remember the exact name of it. I wonder if it'll say here. Checking. Wow, this Wikipedia page is a lot. We're actually just going to skip over. They have a whole background on the Battle of Mogadishu. But basically, they go to this town square, and they get caught in a fight with the rebels, the terrorist organization, whoever it is, and it just goes completely AWR. And it kind of starts when Orlando Bloom's character falls out of a helicopter. Not to be like a spoiler, but it happens like right away in the movie. And you start to see from there all these events transpire. And, you know, characters just keep dying. And I honestly had no idea what Black Hawk Down meant. And then the movie starts, and you're like, Black Hawk helicopters. I'm like, oh my gosh, it should have been obvious from the get-go. But it's crazy how many big-name celebrities got their start here. And it's funny to see, like, the big names who wouldn't die at all and just them dying. That's why I say something really real about this movie is, like, you're not having any heroic final stance here. You're not getting caught with a bunch of bullets and then dying. No, it is. It is a real war movie. So Black Hawk Down, check it out. I'd be very curious to hear from people who are actually in war, like veterans, what they think of a movie of this caliber. So Black Hawk Down, check it out. Highly recommend it. For me, it gets an 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10 on the Zachary Ruger movie scale. That's my little picket, which doesn't mean much, but there you have it. The second movie that I have watched recently, of course, with my lovely girlfriend, Lexi, and it was Priscilla. Lexi wanted to watch this Priscilla, the other half of the tale of Elvis. You know, you saw your Baz Luhrmann Elvis movie, and now you get the side of his wife, Priscilla Presley, and played by Kaylee Spaney, who did an amazing job. Kaylee Spaney was utterly amazing in this, and I was trying to think, where have I seen her before? Where have I seen her before? And I go and look, and she was in Alien Romulus. We loved that movie. She was in Civil War. I haven't seen that. Pacific Rim Uprising. Faintly remember that. And she's going to be in the third A Knives Out film. So amazing stuff with her. Also, Jacob Elordi playing Elvis. He was also in Saltburn and Euphoria. He's been in a number of things. These are two rising actors and actresses. And this film, man, trying to paint my boy Elvis like a bad guy, but honestly, from the stuff that you hear, I mean, I feel like this is probably an accurate telling. Now, obviously, more towards Priscilla, but just utterly insane. Insane that it tells how she was 14 and he was 24. He was on a military base and he met her. He was like the sergeant's or the general's daughter or whatever, and just took a liking to her. And when she was 16 or 17, she moved to live with him in Graceland, and he wouldn't even sleep with her until they got married when she was, I think, 18 or 19. And just he treated her pretty terribly from what it looks like, and it's just heartbreaking. You see her just completely change herself to fit his view, and you know, it's Elvis. You know, this is a different side of Elvis. It's not the mainstream version we've seen, and I'm sure some people will compare Jacob Elordi's performance to Austin Butler, but Austin Butler portrayed the Elvis that we all know and love, and Jacob Elordi portrayed the Elvis that Priscilla knew, because Priscilla Presley was an executive producer on this film. Now, do have to say, like, my goodness, Priscilla was a cutie. All right, I don't blame Elvis, but, you know, this, you know, she was completely in love with him, and he, honestly, it seems like he couldn't care less about her at times. You know, he'd cheat with other girls on the road, and he would, like, manipulate her, and, like, he'd get angry at her, and then be like, I'm so sorry, no, I'm so sorry, my love, and I just, like, wow. Elvis, what are you doing? But 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb, not too bad. It gets a 6.9 for me. 6.9 just because it doesn't end happy. You know, it ends really sad. It ends with her finally leaving him, and it is emotional. It really is emotional. And at the end, he just can't even care. You know, he ends with, like, maybe in another lifetime, and she says, if I don't leave now, then I'll stay forever. And man, it's just, it's heavy. It's really heavy. Watch it on Max, very good. But it's basically a two-person film. Like, a bunch of okay background actors and stuff, but other than that, nothing much. Just Elvis and Priscilla, and that's kind of the story. You know, that's just kind of how it goes. Some things on Google here. Why did Elvis not make love to Priscilla? Elvis Presley not consummates his marriage. He expressed the premise for not having sex with a woman who had a child. I have no. Oh, that was something weird. Yeah. So after she had their child, he didn't have sex with her, and that really threw her off. I mean, he treated her pretty terribly. He treated her really, really terribly. So Priscilla, it's a sad watch at times. Honestly, it's one of the stories that maybe needs to be told. Maybe we need to see this other side of Elvis. Now, obviously, he made Suspicious Minds, Rubbernecking, Hound Dog, you know, Jailhouse Rock. You know, we can look past everything he did to his wife. I'm sorry, Priscilla. I love this film. I love you, Priscilla Presley. But it's Elvis. He's the king. And maybe, you know, at times we can look past the faults of others for the good they've done society, if you can call what Elvis did good. I think it did. He made some amazing freaking music, for goodness sakes. Yes, check it out, if you will. And am I going to recommend it? Should I recommend it? You can do without watching this, but if you do watch it, it's an experience. It's really an experience. It's kind of, like I said, sad. Very sad. And with that, we get into the final movie that I have a little review for. It is brand new, came out in 2025. Oh, Priscilla came out in 2023, but Mountainhead. Mountainhead is a comedy, satire, drama, dark comedy. It is, I don't know why I watched it. Good to be honest, I got suckered into watching it. So the people that make Succession, the show I've been watching, and, you know, entire premise of this film is you have four tech billionaires. It's a four-man cast. You have Steve Carell, Corey Michael Smith, who was really good in this film, really good. He was in Gotham. He was in Gotham. That's all I really know that I might know him from. Rami Youssef, he was pretty good in this. He is from a show called Rami for 3 years. He was in Poor Things. That's a popular movie. I think he's a comedian, honestly. And then Jacob Schwartzman, who has been in a lot of movies. Queer, Asteroid City, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Grand Budapest Hotel, The Hunger Games. He's been in a number of different things. But it focuses around these four tech billionaire friends, and they meet up at Jason Schwartzman, or Soup. His name is Soup. His house he has, and it's called Mountainhead. That's just the name of the house. And basically, you know, they're on top of a mountain. It's Mountainhead. And the entire premise of the movie is they're all just discussing techie billionaire things as the world is falling apart. And, you know, there's the twist in this movie is so dumb. It's not even like a twist. It's just where the movie leads to. And honestly, it ends with you going like, are they going to make an unnecessary sequel? I feel like this honestly should have been like a 10-part series and there's more story to be told. But I'm watching this movie, and there was at one point I thought they were going to pull the trigger on doing something, which I think they should have done, but instead they didn't. And honestly, after it was over, I'm like, this was just a waste. This was a waste of my time. But Rotten Tomatoes has it at 79%. IMDb has it at 5.5. IGN out of 5. I'm agree, 5.7. I'll give it 5.7. And it honestly just gives me in a perspective into how I really think these tech billionaires are. Like, honestly, there's parts of this movie where they're talking about buying countries because they have so much money, and how they actually have like a call scheduled with Brazil to talk about running things, and how this guy who has $500 million net worth is mad that he doesn't have $1 billion net worth. And then there's this one moment where Steve Carell's character has more money. He's like $63 billion, and then his other friend passes him from like $59 billion to $75 billion, and Steve Carell freaks out at him, and they just like razz each other. Like, they're just so mean to one another. They call each other like the Brewsters. Oh, it's so bad. And there's this weird moment where they all go up on like this hill, and they all like write their net worth on their chest, and they all scream out like things they want. One person screaming out like transhumanism, one person is screaming out like world control. And honestly, I feel like this is them trying to tell us some things about the rich elites. I'm just saying, that's just my guess, honestly. Just my guess. But yes, Jesse Armstrong directed it. He directs, Succession. And yeah, this was just so stupid. So stupid. It's all based around this AI technology. That's what they're talking about. And it's causing like all this chaos across the world. It got to a point where like I'm watching, I'm just like, what's going on? Now, there were some comedic moments. They're like, spoiler warning here quickly. So just move forward 2 minutes, but or even a minute. But they start to try and kill one of their like friends in the group. And they're just so bad at it. And oh, it's just so dumb. Like, the movie is such a dumb movie. Not even, it's like you're laughing not at actually what's happening, but just at the dumbness of it. So yeah, I do not recommend this movie. everyone can do without seeing this, in my opinion, but now you know. Now you know this movie exists, and if you want a background movie, this is a perfect background movie. Like, you don't actually want to pay attention while playing your phone, you want to look up every now and then. Now, I watched the full thing all through, so I got the whole gist of it, but nonetheless, it happened, it's over. Now, don't waste your time on this. Now, what you should have wasted your time on, in a good way, was Money in the Bank. That's right, WWE Money in the Bank went down, and we, of course, predicted everything that would happen, and honestly, we nailed all of our predictions. Really, pretty much all the obvious predictions took place, and I think we went with Rhea Ripley, maybe, but oh well. But yes, Money in the Bank happened. It was exciting. It went down. Let's talk about it. So, first off, 17,000 people in the Intuit Dome. This place didn't get crowded until the final two matches. Like, there were not hardcore WWE fans there, clearly. You could just tell the arena was empty, like dead empty. And I do think that under Triple H, that there's been some good, but honestly, there's just a lot of questionable decisions. Like, first off, we have now had three straight consecutive years where there is an unnecessary tag match to main event the show. And honestly, the Money in the Bank matches didn't even feel that important. You know, these matches don't feel important anymore. Someone was saying that, you know, they should have this match at WrestleMania and just have one briefcase. But the only issue is you would have to have a men and women. So I don't know if that can actually take place, but it's interesting. So we kick things off. Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, 25 minutes open to show. Pretty good. Pretty good stuff. Naomi wins. There was one little issue with both Money in the Bank matches, and that was the endings were not climactic. They were anticlimactic. So first off, Naomi, you know, basically goes in, the ladder is there, she climbs it to the top, no one stops her, and she wins, which I think was the correct choice. There was one moment everyone's looking back at where Stephanie Vaquer was doing the kiss of death, her one move with, she's like slamming their face down between her thighs. It's weird to say that loud, but that's basically what it is, to Rhea Ripley on the ladder, which was cool. But someone brought up an interesting point, how, you know, the original ladder matches were so good because everyone was experienced with ladder matches, and for a lot of these competitors, almost all of them, they're not experienced in ladder matches, and they're not built for ladder matches. Like, when I think of a ladder match, LA Knight is not built for a ladder match. That's not his style. You know, Solo Sikoa isn't a ladder match type of guy. And when I'm watching this, you know, Rhea Ripley, she just didn't fit into a ladder match per se. She is the persona, she's amazing, but it just didn't really hit per se. Now, Julia, we knew she's going after the Women's United States Championship, wasn't going to win. Alexa Bliss never really had that moment, but Roxanne Perez looked good, Stephanie Vaquer looked good, and yes, Naomi wins. We now have a heel with the briefcase, and her and Tiffany Stratton are probably going to go into a feud, unless they have Jade Cargill. I'm thinking maybe Jade Cargill is, I'm trying to think. If Jade Cargill beats Tiffany Stratton, and then we get a cash-in from Naomi, that could be a fun little angle there. But yeah, this happened, this went down. What's next for all of them? I mean, Stephanie Vaquer and Lola Vice had a fantastic tag team match earlier in the day at Worlds Collide. You also had Chad Gable, and I don't know if his name's Vigo or something, but they put on a 5-star classic. Worlds Collide was utterly insane from all the clips I've seen. I didn't watch it live, but the clips I watched back, crazy enough. Stephanie Vaquer is a star. Roxanne Perez, probably going to float around in that, not the Bloodline, what's it called? The Judgment Day storyline. Rhea Ripley will probably go after a world title, and Alexa Bliss will probably go to main card. But yes, good stuff to Naomi. First time winner. Love to see it. After that, you know, I bring up Worlds Collide because then you add your fifth match. They always sneak a fifth match in. And earlier in the day, it was Octagon Jr., who I can only assume is, he's a Mexican luchador, signed to WWE and Lucha Libre. He's the third wrestler to use the ring name, Octagon Jr., World Trios Champion, AA American, Latin American Champion. Yeah, he is a Mexican Latino wrestler, and he took on Dominic Mysterio, and it was a 4-minute, 55-second squash match for Dominic Mysterio. But big finish for Dom. You know, they're putting him on cards. You love to see it. And he had a funny moment at Worlds Collide with, there's this guy called Mr. Iguana. I have no idea who this guy is. He's taken over wrestling. And so his gimmick is he is Mr. Iguana, and he has his stuffed animal iguana. It is the dumbest thing ever, but that's professional wrestling for you. So Dom getting the win here. I think we inevitably get to Dominic Mysterio losing to Finn Balor. I think that is a perfect angle to take, but it just depends how we're going to get there. Now, Dominic Mysterio might also take on AJ Styles, some people are saying, that maybe Karrion Kross will cost AJ Styles. I don't know what to do, but this match happened. I mean, about as irrelevant of a match as you can get. Not to be rude or anything, but yeah, that's just how it goes. Now, after that, you had a last chance match for the WWE Women's Intercontinental Championship. That's what they called it. A last chance match. That's got to be... Oh, that's just the dumbest thing ever. But, yeah. Oh, well, it is what it is. Becky Lynch defeats Lyra Valkyra. We predicted it. 15 minutes, 20 seconds. It delivered as always. I will say Becky Lynch's ring gear looked like normal clothes you would wear on the street, which was kind of odd. But, yeah, good stuff. Becky Lynch wins, gets it done. I even see how she won. I don't know what the actual finish was, but afterwards, Lyra Valkyra crowned her and then hit her with like a suplex at her finisher, which was pretty good. So I think we're going to get one more match from these two, which I would hope we have a last chance match. Let's do a last man standing match or something. Let's do a freaking, I don't even know, steel cage match. We need a stipulation for these two as they complete their trilogy and then move on from there. But honestly, Lyra Valkyra has become a star since winning the Intercontinental Championship, and Becky Lynch has helped elevate her. I would not be mad if we had Lyra Valkyra win this feud in the end. But yes, Becky Lynch wins. We predicted it. It happened. After that, the men's Money in the Bank ladder match, 33 minutes and 35 seconds. This was a long in, and it was good. It was good. You know, I'll probably say that this was one of the better Money in the Bank pay-per-views overall, and this ladder match was decently pretty good. You had some fun moments here and there, but I'll say the one thing that they did good was that they did make you think everyone was going to win it here and there. Everyone had their moments. Andrade, you know, maybe they didn't give too many, but he was still great in this. El Grande Americano, he was excellent. I do think everyone watching this is kind of like, okay, it's probably time the El Grande Americano Chad Gable angle ends. I would just love to see more Chad Gable instead of more El Grande Americano. LA Knight is robbed again. They've teased us now 3 straight years of LA Knight winning, and honestly, I'm ready for an LA Knight world title run. Okay, I'm actually kind of sick of Triple H doing my boy dirty like this. Like, the finishing sequence was Seth Rollins bashes in LA Knight's head on the ladder, and then he goes and wins. That's how it went. Penta, cool moments as always. Solo Sikoa stealing the show. Solo Sikoa is about to win. Then Jacob Fatu costs him. And I don't know for sure, guys, but Jacob Fatu might now be a heel, and Solo Sikoa might be a babyface. I don't know the exact angle, but those two are definitely going to feud now, and I am all here for it. SummerSlam for the U.S. Championship. Give it to me. And yes, of course, you had Bronson Reed and what's-his-face? Bron Breakker. Bron Breakker, yes. Coming out, Bron Breakker hit a nasty spear on El Grande Americano. Just utterly hilarious, his launching spear. And yeah, Seth Rollins wins, does what he needs to do, but no CM Punk, no Roman Reigns. In fact, on the entire card, there was only one big return, and honestly, it was... I'm just kind of sick of it. I don't know what the angle is. I'm kind of over it. I can't lie. But yeah, no CM Punk, no Roman Reigns. Run-of-the-mill match. I think the only thing I'm scared of is they're going to have Seth Rollins cash the briefcase in on Monday Night Raw tonight. I'm recording this on the 9th. Monday Night Raw goes down tonight. I'm worried they might have him cash in on Jey Uso versus Gunther. I really hope you don't. I think to make this faction legit, you need some form of title or, you know, briefcase. And now Seth Rollins has a briefcase. So I think he should hold on to that, keep it. I think he should tease cashing in on Jey Uso. I think he should tease cashing in on John Cena. I think this works best for the feud that is about to unveil, which whatever they do. But Seth Rollins wins. 2-time Money in the Bank ladder match winner. I will say this is probably the best move. Probably the best move. Does suck they do my boy LA Knight dirty every single year. Now, with that, we got into the main event, 23 minutes, 45 seconds of John Cena and Logan Paul versus Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso. And people were hating on this. I liked it. I thought it was an entertaining match. There were some crazy moments. Logan Paul is phenomenal. This is probably one of the best John Cena matches we've had since his return this year. And it was good. I thought it was good. I thought that, you know, obviously Cody Rhodes and John Cena are not John Cena, Jey Uso are buddies. They work together as a tag team. John Cena and Logan Paul, obviously the two heels working together, don't actually like each other. And a lot of cool moments. Logan Paul doing like a springboard moonsault off of the ropes onto the announce table, looked like some out of video game. He was vlogging himself, and then he got suplex, crazy moment there. Then ate a super splash from Jey Uso. And just crazy stuff, crazy stuff. I will say the attitude adjustment is just like clearly is like not a finisher for John Cena. Like, I do think the one thing I like about John Cena's heel character is his finisher is low blows, then hitting someone with the belt. But right when you think John Cena is about to win, someone masked out of the crowd, all in black, comes out, starts attacking, and is revealed to be R-Truth. And R-Truth hits John Cena with the belt. Cody Rhodes comes in, hits a crossroads, and Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso win. Cody Rhodes pins John Cena. And it gave the old vibes of, oh, it's the Usos pinning Roman Reigns. And then, oh, it's Solo Sikoa pinning Cody Rhodes. It was just a lot of flashbacks. I was getting flashbacks to the last few years. And honestly, I'm kind of over it. If I'm being honest. But yeah, interestingly enough, you do have R-Truth back. R-Truth isn't a heel. I just think he was correcting the course of what's up with John Cena. I think R-Truth is not even R-Truth anymore. He's Ron Killings. He's going by his real name or something. And I think his sole mission now is to make John Cena a champion or a good guy again. And he's going to do whatever it takes to get him to do that. So Night of Champions is coming up in, I think, 3 weeks. I think the main event, John Cena, R-Truth, could potentially be the case. I don't really know if that screams main event. But yes, John Cena versus Ron Killings might be the next option. As for Logan Paul, people are saying John Cena is going to take on Logan Paul. Two heels, like, those two are just two heels where it's like, it just won't work. Just won't work with those two. Now, as for Jey Uso, it appears he's a bit hurt, so maybe Gunther's going to beat him. I don't know. And then Cody Rhodes is going to go challenge John Cena, probably at SummerSlam. So there's your next two matchups. Sadly, I don't think we're getting CM Punk versus John Cena. Sadly, I don't know if we're going to get that at any point now as the summer continues to roll along, but I don't know. This Ron Killings, R-Truth angle with John Cena, I think might have run its course for me. I don't know. Some people are red hot with it. I don't know if the R-Truth getting cut was a work, but interesting. We'll see what goes down on Monday Night Raw tonight. But in my world, you know, I think Logan Paul just kind of pisses off for a bit. Cody Rhodes takes on John Cena at SummerSlam. You can do John Cena versus Ron Killings at Night of Champions. Although, you could do Cody Rhodes at Night of Champions and then do John Cena CM Punk at SummerSlam. I don't know. And then as for Jey Uso, I also think he should get past Gunther. If he loses to Gunther on Monday Night Raw, that would be the dumbest thing ever. So Money in the Bank 2025, good overall. Good overall, I would say go watch the highlights on Twitter. So that's what I do when I don't actually want to go through and watch all of it. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, I say we get right on into WWE. Not WWE, what am I saying? UFC 316, that's right, UFC 316. Went down this past Saturday. A lot took place. We went 8-4 on predictions, and yet another week where I just miss on some picks. I'm shaking my head at I shouldn't have missed on some of these. Now, one of them I am just mind blown by. Another one I'm kind of shocked by. But then, yeah, well, the one that we talked about, Kevin Holland, Vicente Luque, I was literally like, I don't even want Vicente Luque to win. I'm just picking him just kind of as like a reverse psychology so Kevin Holland wins. So not only was I rooting for Kevin Holland, but I was happy when he won. So I was kind of like, I question why I do that. So maybe I should just stick with the guys I want to win. But let's get right into it. From the first prelim to the main event, let's do it. Kicking off the card, we had your run-of-the-mill prelim fight in the men's lightweight division. Mark Romero's taking on Mark Choynski, and I'm glad we didn't fall into the Mark Choynski undefeated trap, you know, being a slight underdog, because Mark Romero's handed him handsomely. 30-27, 30-27, and a little 29-28 on the scorecards. I don't even know what round they would have given Mark. Maybe the last round is what Chris Lee gave him, but Mark well dominates him, outstrikes him 31-14 in round one, 52-26 in round two, and 27-18 in round three, including a knockdown. So Mark Romero's getting it done. Mark Choynski, 58 significant strikes landed to the 110 of Madero's. 2 of 11 on takedowns, gets 4 minutes and 39 seconds of control time, getting his first UFC defeat, unfortunately. And as for Mark, well, this will now be his third win in the UFC. 11-1 now, 3-0 in the UFC, 9-fight winning streak. Good for him. Now, I'd say out of all his UFC performances, this was the most impressive. And for someone who doesn't really have that much hype in the first place, this is the exact type of win that you need to get. I absolutely love that for him. Mark, you know, I don't know if he's going to be back. He may be back. I mean, who knows? Honestly, it is impossible to tell at times who will be back and when. But Mark Webb will most definitely be back. And lightweight division is just unlimited. Unlimited options at lightweight. You know, someone that people are bringing up was Diego Ferreira. Veteran, hasn't fought in a while. He could be someone. If we do want to go the veteran route, you have your Michael Johnsons. You know, we mentioned Alexander Hernandez, Chase Hooper. If Alexander Hernandez loses that, like I think he will, that could be a good bounce-back fight for him. You obviously have, gosh, who else is there? Who else is there out there for him in the lightweight division? Mike Davis. Mike Davis could be someone that he could take on. I don't know. I don't really know. But Markwell, he'll be around in the UFC for a while as long as he can keep winning. He's 28. The win streak continues. There's a lot of unranked lightweight contenders for him to take on. As for Mark, I don't know. Another short-nosed fight. I think he might need to head back to regional MMA. You know, he just didn't really impress that much. You know, there's always going to be someone coming up off of Dan White's Contender Series that may need a little pick-me-up fight. Plus, I think he just signed a one-off deal. So, Mark, tough stuff. But, hey, you made it to the UFC, and you didn't get finished. Sometimes that's a win unto itself. After that, another lightweight matchup where Quinlan Salkiad took on Yanal Ashmov, and Quinlan dominated him. 30-27, 29-20, and 29-28 to get the victory. And, you know, similar to the other fight, they might have given, you know, round one, if anything. But, yeah, I had 30-27 as well. 79 significant strikes to 41, 89 significant strikes, total strikes to 65, 8 of 23 on takedowns for 7.5 minutes control time for Quinlan, 0 of 6 for, you know, he had one reversal in round one to get 2 minutes of control time. But, I mean, 23 takedown shot, I did not know that was it. Quinlan Salkiad, and you know what? He did what he had to do. The win streak is now at 9. Good stuff for him. That's right. Lost his first professional bout by submission, and since then has just been on an absolute tear. But yes, 2-0 now in the UFC in 2025. He could be Fighter of the Year. He could be if he keeps winning like this. I mean, obviously not, but you know what I'm saying. Nomination from Quinlan Salkiad. For Yanal, you know, second loss in the UFC. He's 2-2. He's been fairly inactive, which I think has been the main detractor to him having success. So if Quinlan does want to, if Yanal does want to have another shot in the UFC, he will need to remain active. Some people are maybe saying that you just matchmake these two lightweight bouts together, which I could maybe see being the case, but another name thrown in the hat was Mahashat. He's someone kind of in a interesting spot in the lightweight division. I don't know. I think they'll bring back Yanal, but as for Quinlan, I think a good opportunity should be up next. You know, when we were bringing up our Michael Johnsons, our Jim Millers, our, who was the other name? Diego Ferreira's. These are all names I like. These are all names that I like to hear of potential opponents for these guys to take on. So we'll see what's next for Quinlan, but good win here. Did what he had to do. A lot of takedown shot, landing 8, and you know, didn't do too bad of a job. I saw a couple clips of these two swinging at each other. Good stuff overall. But after these two lightweight bouts opened the evening, the entire place got rejuvenated when Jusang Yu gave us, and guys, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to say this is currently probably tied or might even be my KO of the year. Insane work. Jusang Yu, Zombie Jr., knocks out Jekka Sara Guy in bloody, bloody fashion. I mean, oh my goodness. Fight lasted 28 seconds. Jekka is just coming at him, and he clips him with literally just like a hook. It was like a left hook, clips him right on the chin. Jekka face plants. I mean, face plants out cold. You see him slump, like right when the punch hits him, slump, standing up, falls face forward. I mean, probably broke his nose on the fall. Dominant work from Jusang Yu. I mean, just beautiful. Beautiful stuff from Jusang Yu. He's a minus 500 favorite for a reason, and after watching that, I can understand why. Amazing work. Amazing work for Jusang Yu, getting his fourth career knockout, fifth career finish, and yeah, he belongs to the UFC. He said his goal is to not just deliver a championship to Korean Zombie, but to the people of South Korea, and oh, I absolutely love it. Jusang Yu, I am your biggest fan already. I mean, it was nasty. It was nasty work from Jusang Yu. In featherweight division, you look out. You look out, featherweight division. You keep your eyes open for him. Well, he's coming in. How old is Jusang? 31. So, I mean, he's in his fighting prime. I'll say that. He's in his fighting prime. These are the years where you need to really lock in. So, Jusang Yu, big featherweight matchup coming up next year. I'm sure they're going to try and get him into the ranking, especially with a finish like this. So, they're going to give him someone probably in the medium range of opponents to take on. You know, I'm thinking you know, someone to the level of Pat Sabatini, someone to the level of Giga Chikadze, you know, maybe up that alley. You know, I don't know if they're going to give him someone super high up, but they could perhaps. I don't know. As for Jekasera Guy, he might be done. I'm thinking Jekasera Guy's done in the UFC. I mean, this dude, live by the sword, die by the sword, but he's now been finished in round one, his last two fights. He's sitting at 1-3 in the UFC. He's been finishing all of them. I'm thinking that might be it for Jekasera Guy. Or maybe Jekasera Guy moves up to lightweight and he can take on Mark Jankowski for some good reason. But Jusang Yu, man, welcome to the UFC. Absolutely love you. And he's definitely going to be getting a fight coming up in the next 3 to 2 months. I guarantee it. Following that, Wang Kong and Arian de Silva. And props to Arian de Silva. That's who I'm going to give props to, because I have no idea how she survived Wang Kong. I just don't. I've no idea. No idea she survived Wang Kong. I mean, Wang Kong decimated her. And to make matters worse, Wang Kong got better with every single round. 143 significant strikes to 63. Landed a knockdown on her. 0 for 4 on takedowns for Ariana. I mean, 46 to 17 round 1. 42 to 19 round 2. And 55 significant strikes to 27. Wang Kong, yeah. We knew Wang Kong was good. We knew Wang Kong was good. I mean, actually seeing it, crazy. Two-fight winning streak. 3-1 in the UFC. Yeah. Yeah, that loss to Gabriel Fernandez is looking like the biggest fluke I've ever seen. Remember when Colby Covington randomly got submitted? Remember when Dustin Poirier and Max Holloway? Like, these are the type of guys that I'm thinking of that just randomly suffered defeat. And then it's like, okay, now's the time to lock in and start doing good. So Wang Kong, finally in the rankings. She'll be ranked number 13, I presume. Become Tuesday, so probably when most of you will be listening to this. And where to from here? I mean, people are saying Jessica Andrade at 9. I love that option. Vivian Araújo at 8 is another good option. And if we don't want to send her to the 8-9 range, you always have your loser of Rose Namajunas and Miranda Maverick, who will probably be ranked number 11. But Wang Kong, in for big things. In for very, very big things. Now, as for Arian de Silva, 3 straight losses, you know, her UFC career, I think, as I'm doing a quick little assessment, she may be sitting at a negative UFC record. I don't know if this is true, but she may be 6-9 in the UFC. So, Arian de Silva, unless she's taking on, you know, some rising up-and-comer, I think she may be getting cut from the UFC. So, Arian de Silva, sucks to see you go, but, you know, maybe they'll keep her. You know, she's the queen of violence. It's not like the fight wasn't entertaining. She just offered nothing to Wang Kong. But to be fair, Wang Kong is an absolute savage. After the early prelims were done, we got into the regular prelims, and we start off pretty rocky. Pretty rocky from here. Andreas Gustafsson, Chaos Williams. I should have stuck with him, man. I was going to go with Andreas. I switched to Chaos on the pod, and, you know, I had to eat it because Andreas Gustafsson is legit. He's a legit 34 years old, you know, prospected. Here you go. Welcome to the UFC moment for Andreas Gustafsson. Extending his win streak to 4 straight wins. I mean, dominated. Dominated Chaos Williamson. 30-26 scorecards and a 30-27. Mauls him. Utterly mauls him. 8 of 14 on takedowns, 9.5 minutes of control time, 98 significant strikes to 39. The pressure of Andreas, too much for Chaos Williamson. Just couldn't overcome it. I mean, Andreas was in his face the entire time. Round 1 was the best round for Chaos, and he still lost it. Round 2, the takedowns started going for Andreas, and then Round 3 just took him down, punching him, taking him down, mauling him. I mean, 71 total strikes of 14. In round number 3. Just domination for Andreas Gustafsson. Great work, too. Great debut for Andreas Gustafsson. I'm excited to see what is next in the welterweight division, which is always in need. Always in need of some exciting fighters. You know, there's someone, you know, I love to matchmake on the same card, but, you know, obviously Vicente Luque didn't pick up a win. I would maybe love to see Andreas versus Vicente. But if we want to keep him at a more lower level of fights up next, you know, there's always your Li Jing Liangs. I'm thinking maybe even Neil Magny. I don't know how good they view him, but hey, you know what? 34, kicking butt. I say we reward him with a big fight after this. As for Chaos, someone lower level at welterweight could be the option. I mean, this is 2 straight losses. You know, he's 2-3 in his last 5. It hasn't been pretty. It hasn't really been a pretty run for Chaos Williamson. As far as his UFC career is, you know, going 6-4. Another tough defeat. It doesn't appear that he's getting better at the age of 31. So we'll just need to assess what to do with Chaos Williamson. So we'll see. What did MMA Theory suggest that Chaos Williamson do next? He suggested Song Ki-Don. I really like that fight. But, yeah, Chaos really got to work out what to do. You know, you can make a little game plan in 3 years and bounce back. I need to do that long-term thinking right now. So I'm kind of with you, Chaos. Let's assess. Let's get back. Let's get down to business. But great debut for Andreas Gustafsson. I'll be curious to see how he does next. I think he's getting a finish next. It's usually these dominant performances like this where you can get a finish in your next matchup. After that, we got into, I mean, I was just shocked watching this. Like, my mind was absolutely blown as Waldo Cortez Acosta beat Sergey Spivak. Just embarrassing. And by the way, verdict scorecard had Sergey win in 29-28. I didn't actually watch this fight, but from what I've seen, Sergey only attempted 6 takedowns, landed 2, 2 minutes, 25 seconds of control time. Waldo outstruck him 110-48 significantly. Stats don't lie. It looks like Waldo Cortez Acosta beat the bricks off of Sergey Spivak. I mean, 27-14 7 strikes round 1, 36 7 strikes to 18 round 2, and 47 7 strikes to 16 in round number 3. I mean, my mind's blown. My mind is utterly blown, as Waldo Cortez Acosta will now go from being ranked number 11 to being ranked number 7. Waldo Cortez Acosta is the number 7 heavyweight in the world now. How is this possible? How has this been let happen? 5-fight winning streak now. I feel like these have been handpicked matchups for some reason. I have no idea. I have no idea how Waldo Cortez Acosta has done this. But Sergey Spivak, I would be embarrassed. 2-fight losing streak, 1-3 in his last 4. That's a doozy. That is an utterly and absolute doozy. But yeah, Waldo Cortez Acosta outstriking his way to victory over Sergey Spivak. Now, I can't lie, there's not been an exciting Waldo Cortez Acosta fight ever, but now he has finessed his way to being freaking good. Just no idea. No idea how. I don't even know what to do with him next. You know, I think you have Curtis Blaydes taking on Ryzvan Kuniev. Winner of that versus Waldo could be the move. Other than that, I guess he has to fight up. Maybe we make him fight the winner of Derek Lewis and Tal'Shawn Teixeira. I like that option better. Winner of Derek Lewis and Tal'Shawn Teixeira takes on, Waldo Cortez Acosta. There's what you do. If not, winner of Curtis Blaydes and Ryzvan Kuniev. Because I feel like, or even Sergey Spivak, Sergey Pavlovich versus Waldo Cortez Acosta could be a good option. Because I think Tom Aspinall destroys Waldo Cortez Acosta. I can't even picture those two fighting each other. I actually love to see that. Just watch Waldo get his butt whooped. But yeah, as for Spivak, he'll probably just be bumped down one spot. And I don't even know. But remake him versus Shamil Gaziev again. Let's make that fight again. I mean, honestly, what a boring fight it looked like. After that, though, I mean, the man does it again. Asmat Mirzakhanov, dude, give him a big opponent. He puts Brenson Ribeiro's lights out cold. Mark Beltran stepped in just a bit too late because Brenson Ribeiro was already knocked out cold. 27-7 strikes to 8. Fight only lasted 3.5 minutes. Beautiful work. Beautiful work from Asmat. Make it 11 career knockouts, and of his 15 wins, 12 of them are by finish. Dude's a beauty. Dude's an absolute beauty. He is now 5-0 in the UFC with 4 knockouts. Crazy work. Crazy work from Asmat Mirzakhanov. I mean, this dude is crazy. Dude is an absolute wild dog out there. He's ranked number 12. I'd honestly bump him up to 11. Dare I say even 10? I don't know if they're gonna, but hey, next fight for him, Volkan Ozdemir, maybe even Alexander Rokic. You can do Nikita Krylov maybe, but dude, Asmat Mirzakhanov, I knew he was good. This is just solidifying it. My man hits like a truck. My man hits so hard. It's incalculable. For Brenson Ribeiro, I don't know. He's 2-3 in the UFC. It's tough to say. Light heavyweight division, it's a tricky division at times to matchmake. I don't really know. Volkan Ozdemir, I'd say, would probably be my leading runner for Asmat Mirzakhanov. As for Brenson, I don't know. How about Brenson Ribeiro, Ryan Spann? Brenson Ribeiro, Ryan Spann, if those two are even still in the company. But good win for Asmat. Love to see it. And then the final prelim of the night. And dude, we already mentioned him earlier. He's taking on the number 1 ranked flyweight at the end of June. That's right, the number 14, soon to be ranked number 12, minimum, maybe even 11, 10, Joshua Van. I love Josh Van. I just adore Joshua Van. And dude destroyed Bruno Silva. Dude absolutely murked the bricks off of him. I mean, fantastic. Fantastic work from Joshua Van. Seventh career knockout, ninth career finish. Dude just brought it to him. Brought it to him. And Joshua Van, don't blink. After getting upset by Charles Johnson in July of 2024, in under a year, he is gone on a four-fight winning streak. Second win of the year for 2025. And look out, Marab. We may have a new fighter of the year in Joshua Van. All right. 28-7 strikes at 22. He dropped him once in round number one. 52-7 strikes at 22 in round two. Dropped him twice in round two. Round three, 45-7 strikes at 32. Bruno Silva was thrown back, but I mean, just way too much. Got overwhelmed, curled up in a ball, and that was that. Vitor Ribeiro was like, stop this fight. I'm jumping in. No more. 125-7 strikes at 76. Three knockdowns, is now tied for a flyweight record, and 149 total strikes to 77. Defended five of the six attempts that Bruno Silva threw at him. And by the way, the one takedown Bruno Silva landed, he only held him down for 9 freaking seconds. That's insane. Amazing work. Amazing work from Joshua Van. And we don't have to talk about what's next because he's taking on Brandon Royval. And honestly, I don't know. Maybe he'll knock out Brandon Royval. Brandon Royval is a dog. You know, we know that he's beaten Tatsuo Taira, but that was a close fight. We know he took, you know, Brandon Moreno to a decision. Yet again, another close fight. Both those split decisions. But, man, he's an absolute warrior. Joshua Van, love to see it. As for Bruno Silva, dude, it's not like he's not in these fights. He's just getting his butt whooped. Back-to-back fights, finished in round three. Manel Kamp and Joshua Van. I think he needs an unranked guy. Or even, you know, Kai Sakura's taking on Tim Elliott. Maybe if he loses that. Ramzan Temeryov, maybe. You know, there's also unranked guys like, who did Joshua Van actually, Ray Tazura could be an option, but I hope they do keep him. But then again, Bruno Silva is 35, in the last stage of his career. Joshua Van, 23, and he's taking on the number one guy in the world. Joshua Van is an example to all that your dreams can come true. Following that, we dove into the main card, and like I said, Kevin Holland, Vicente Luque. We picked Vicente Luque just to pick him in like this reverse psychology, and it oddly worked, because Kevin Holland not only submits him, but submits him with his signature choke, the Anaconda, the Darce choke, as some will call it. And I mean, Kevin whooped him in round one, 35-7 strikes at 22. He was hitting him with some big shots, and then round two, Vicente just somehow got, I don't even know if Kevin Holland shot a takedown of some kind, and then the neck was open, he grabbed it, it was tight, and boom, Kevin Holland getting a submission victory and make it his 10th career submission, 23rd career finish of his 28 career wins. Kevin Holland, mwah, hats off to you. And after losing in January, after getting submitted in 3 minutes and 31 seconds, Kevin said, ah, screw this, I'll go down to welterweight and whoop all these legends. Performance of the night in March, and now performance of the night in June, and he calls out Colby Covington. Perfect. Perfect. Book that fight. Make that fight next. It is the next fight to make. Holland will be ranked number 14. Come the morning. Actually, I think Kevin Holland will be ranked number 15. I think we bump MVP up to 14, perhaps. And yeah, the number 9 ranked Colby Covington. Let's book it for a fight night, or even I'll book it for a pay-per-view. I mean, honestly, that would do really well on that 319 or 318. 318, but Colby Covington has a crazy ego. I don't know if he'll accept, but I do think he should. So, being that Colby Covington isn't like typical MMA fighters and will just accept callouts, we do need to think of a backup option. And when Kevin Holland was basically saying, I don't want to fight these absolute killers that'll burn me, I want to fight actual competitive guys, it gets a bit trickier, you know, because you could have him fight Gilbert Burns. I think that could be a backup option, or perhaps, tough to say. Tough to say, if I'm being honest. Maybe if, I don't know if he's going to do it, maybe if Michael Chandler moved up to weight. You could have Michael Chandler or Kevin Holland. I don't know. I only want fun fights for Kevin Holland. As for Vicente Luque, retirement? I mean, I don't know what to do with Vicente. I don't. He's 33. He's just, he ain't the same guy he used to be. He ain't the same guy he used to be. From being on a freaking tear. I mean, this dude was on a 10-1 streak. Actually, he was on even better. He was like on a 14-2 run. His losses were to Wonder Boy and Leon Edwards. He has now gone 2-4 in his last six, and he has been finished in three of them. So, Vicente, his time has come. His time has come. Might be time to retire. If he does choose to stay, I don't know. I don't know what to do with him next. There's no one in the rankings. There could be a Neil Magny fight, but if anything, he's going to have to fight a young, hungry up-and-comer. And the one name that's coming to mind, Brian Battle. That's right. Brian Battle versus Wonder Boy could be a potential fight. And if you want a matchmake on the same card, Andreas Gustafsson, right there's another fight. But the night belongs to Kevin Holland, another performance bonus. Dude's phenomenal. Dude's phenomenal. And a Colby Covington fight is exactly what Kevin Holland deserves. After that, any energy the arena had, any energy sucked out Mario Bautista, Patchy Mix. Now, I think it's safe to say no one hates Mario Bautista anymore. No one hates him anymore. And by the way, 173 significant strikes landed for Mario opposed to the 122 of Patchy Mix. Mario did a phenomenal, phenomenal job. Now, in terms of the actual fight, I mean, round one, clearly Mario. Round two, closer, but went to Mario in round three, clearly Mario. I mean, Patchy Mix attempted one takedown. A measly attempt, and it was just embarrassing. Embarrassing work from Patchy Mix, looking like he did not belong in the UFC. Like, I'm kidding. The guy that I picked to win was out here whooping boys in the PFL. And once you get to the UFC, take on the number 10 ranked guy in the bantamweight division, you get really humbled really quickly. Mario Bautista is now on an 8-fight winning streak. And mind you, if you want to talk about his entire UFC run, he's sitting at 10-2. Lost to Trevin Jones in 2021 and a loss to Gray Sanhagen in 2019. So, Mario Bautista on a tear. I'd bump him up to 9, maybe even 8. You know, Henry Cejudo's at 9, Rob Vaughn's at 8. I'd bump him past those guys for what's next for him. A couple options. Figueiredo at 6. Marlon Vera rematch at 7. Song Yedong at 5. You could even go up into the Umar Nurmagomedovs at 3. Piotr Jan at 2. Piotr Jan and Marcus McGee, they're going to be fighting, you know. Batista's got a lot of fun options. He's got some talking power now as to what to do. I'm excited to see what is next for him in the UFC. But it's definitely someone in the top 10. And honestly, as I look at this, probably definitely someone in the top 7 to 6. As for Patchy, I don't know. You know, it's kind of the Kaya Sakura, Patricio Pitbull, you know, these guys that debut and lose, what do you do with them? And so let's look at what they've done with other guys. Patricio Pitbull loses to the number 4 ranked Air, is now taking on the number 14th Dan Ige. Kaya Sakura debuts against the champion Bentoa, loses, is now going to be taking on the number 11th ranked Tim Elliott. So when I look at what could be next for Patchy Mix, and when I look at someone who could use a big name like that, I'm looking at the number 14th ranked Montel Jackson. I'm looking at the number 15th ranked Vinicius Oliveira. I'm looking at these guys who might need a win. Now, there's also unranked guys. You got Damon Blackshear. I'm going to throw his name out here right now. Raul Rosas Jr. There is fun fights you can do with Patchy Mix now because you've just snapped again an 8-fight winning streak and in a boring fight. So Patchy Mix in no position now to call any shots. 31, just lost his UFC debut. We'll see how he does. He was also inactive. Also didn't have a striking coach in his corner. There's a lot of things you can point out. But Mario Bautista won, and I'm actually really happy for him. Kind of sad I didn't pick you, Mario. I was going to pick you over Marlon Vera, and I switched for this Patchy Mix guy. My bad. After that, middleweight bout, Joe Pyfer, Kelvin Gastelum, and, you know, after watching the absolute doozy that was Mix and Bautista, we need a pick-me-up, and Joe Pyfer is ready to deliver that. He comes out, and he drops Kelvin Gastelum. We think Kelvin Gastelum is knocked out. Then they're going out, then he drops Kelvin Gastelum again, and then the fight proceeded to just go on at a boring rate. 17 submission strikes to 11 for Joe Pyfer, 19 submission strikes to 14 for Joe Pyfer. Joe Pyfer outstrikes Kelvin Gastelum on the fight, 57-33. One judge gave Pyfer a 10-8 in round one. One gave him a 10-9. One gave him a 10-9. 30-27, 29-27, 20-28. Joe Pyfer wins a very boring decision. Now, the good news is, comes on the mic, basically says, yeah, I know this performance sucked. I've been injured. I've been inactive. I've been trying to fight. I'm sorry. So at least Pyfer acknowledged it. Said he wants to fight someone tough next. But yeah. Yeah, this really just sucked all the energy out of the arena. And that's just not what you look for when you're about to go into two title fights. You don't want to be having a boring fight like this. So Joe Pyfer, 2-fight winning streak now, back on the train, you could say, but he is definitely not getting a ranked opponent coming up next. As for Calvin, yet another unimpressive loss, and you know, he was almost knocked out for the first time in his career. You know, he's been dropped a lot in his career. I don't know what he's still fighting for. You know, he's 33. It's tricky. It's tricky. Middleweight division is unforgiving to aging veterans. And quite frankly, I just don't know what he's fighting for. I really don't. So Calvin can stick around. There'll be guys for you to fight at middleweight. There really isn't a name I would even want to give out. Like, if I'm being honest, I don't even know. Maybe Gerald Meerschaert III, Brad Tavares, maybe a veteran fight because they keep having him take on these up-and-comers, and he keeps getting his butt whooped. So We'll see. As for Joe Pyfer, you know, he wants a ranked opponent. I don't think he's ready for a ranked opponent, but loser of Paulo Costa, Roman Kapilov could be an option. You have Nosutin Rizaboyev if he moves up to middleweight. You got Bruno Ferreira in there in the mix. You even could have Abus Magomedov. There's a plethora of options for Joe Pyfer. We'll see what he does next, but man, kind of a boring performance here. But thankfully, both of our title fights delivered. You know what? They both delivered, and you can't be mad at that. No siree. Kayla Harrison, Julia Pena. Kayla Harrison said she's here to make the women's bantamweight division great again, and she did absolutely that. She submits Julia Pena with a Kimura with 5 seconds left in round number two. Amazing work. Amazing work, and I'm very happy. I am very happy. Kayla Harrison, your new women's bantamweight champion. Doesn't get much better than that. Doesn't get much better than that. And to make matters even better, after she wins, in comes Amanda Nunes. They're making a super fight later in the year. I mean, come on. This is exactly what the women's bantamweight division needed. Exactly. Exactly what they needed. So, Julia Pena will be bumped down to the number one spot in the rankings. Kayla Harrison to the women's bantamweight champion spot. And Kayla's at number 7 on the women's pound for pound. She'll now be ranked number 3 in the women's pound for pound. Dare I say even number 2, maybe even number 1, but probably number 3. Round 1 comes out, you know, striking fairly even. And then Kayla was able to get a hold of Pena, take her down, dominant stuff. Round 2. Even more dominant fashion, took her down even sooner, dominated her, mauled her, was trying to get into a finishing position, did exactly that, gets it done. 3-0 now in the UFC, and in a year, in just under 2 months, Kayla Harrison has joined the UFC and became a champion. 19-1 now, and she gets her 8th career submission and 14th career finish of 19 career wins. Excellent stuff. Excellent stuff for Kayla Harrison. Yeah, her versus Amanda Nunes. We thought we were never going to get it after Nunes retired 2 years ago. And actually, almost 2 years to the date, we're now finding out we're going to be getting that fight later in the year. And that's probably going to main event a pay-per-view. Just to let you all know. Now, I hope it... it is. It is going to main event a pay-per-view. Now, there is a world where it could be the co-main event under Islam Makhachev, Jack Del Malena, or a co-main event under John Jones, Tom Aspinall, to build a real super card, but the UFC has always loved to give Amanda Nunes main events. They think she's this huge draw, which, I mean, she's fun to watch, but this isn't really that big of a draw, like, money-wise and people wanting to watch-wise, so we'll see, but Kayla Harrison dominated Julia Pena in all facets, and oh, it was so satisfying to see. It was so satisfying to see. I think 10-8. I think everyone gave her a 10-8 in round one. By the way, Julia Pena lost a point. She kicked her in the face twice while she was on her back, like, in an upwards position, which is just a big no-no. So if anything, Julia Pena probably got 10-7 in round number one, so pretty satisfying. Pena, I mean, this was expected. This was expected. I mean, this is now her 6th career loss, 4th time getting finished, and I'm not surprised. Not surprised in the slightest. To make matters even better, she said she absolutely gives all the props to Kayla Harrison, loves that Amanda Nunes is coming back, and has called dibs on the winner of that fight. So in Julia Pena's world, she just never has to have a non-title fight ever again. And to be fair, Julia Pena has only been in title fights since 2021 December. That is crazy to think, but that's not what's going to be next. For Kayla, she's taking on Amanda Nunes. Let's say Amanda Nunes gets hurt on short notice. Caitlin Vieira's right there. I think they could have a rematch because she didn't finish her. Now, as what's next for Julia Pena, Caitlin Vieira is a great opponent. Norma Dumont's a great opponent. I think that's what you're going to do, either Caitlin or Norma. The lowest I'd go down, Aileen Perez, and I think she needs a Irene Aldana, Macy Chisone fight. Before she fights up that far, but so glad that Julia Pena is no longer champion. I'm just excited to see how long Kayla Harrison chooses to stay in the UFC, because as I look at the women's bantamweight division, yeah, Amanda Nunes is the only one who can actually contend against her. And I do think that Amanda Nunes coming back and losing to Kayla Harrison is what's best for business, but will that happen? I don't know. We'll have to see it. On the striking department, I'm going Nunes. In the BJJ department, I'm going Nunes, but in terms of grappling, I'm going with Kayla. In terms of power, Kayla, that's going to be a fun fight. Then, ladies and gentlemen, we get to the main event, and for once, I picked Merab. I didn't pick Merab against Umar. I didn't pick Merab against Sugar the first time, and now I have picked Merab, and I was actually able to root for him, and oh yeah, it's a good time to have picked Merab. No, it's a good time to be on the Merab train. Better to get on the machine before it's just in full takeoff mode, and Merab just mauled Sean O'Malley. I mean, I'm honestly confused. Like, the Sean O'Malley I watched knockout Aljamain, the Sean O'Malley I watched rise to the top is not the same Sean O'Malley that has fought Merab. It is not in the slightest. And Merab beat him on the feet, 52 significant strikes, 31. On the ground, 5 of 12 on takedown, 6.5 minutes of control time. and even beat him in the finish department, guillotine choking him in round number three. And mind you, round number three lasted 4 minutes and 42 seconds. Sean O'Malley didn't even throw a significant strike, to let you know. Zero of one. Actually, I'm sorry, he didn't land. It was zero of one. He threw one. He threw one. Just mauled. Just utterly mauled. Merab has now gotten his second career finish by submission and his first finish in goodness knows how long. Goodness knows how long. And mind you, Sugar O'Malley's at an all-time low, probably career-wise. He's going to take a lot of time off. He's either going to come back and fight in the featherweight division, come back and fight whoever's at the top of the bantamweight division later in the year, but you are not going to see Sean O'Malley for some time now. Merab, the reigning defending king, did what he had to do. Round one, took him down twice, was really dominating him. Round two, didn't even land a takedown, but was just striking with him and getting the better of the exchanges. And then round three, went on the takedowns, took him down multiple times, mauled him. Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, 80% of his seven strikes, 12 of 15, he was very, very calculated with his punches in round number three. Merab is now at a 13-fight winning streak. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Yes, 13 victories, the second most currently in the UFC. And I believe, I don't know if it's tied. Like, he's almost up there. You know, you got Islam and Usman tied at 15. Islam, the current winning streak. Silva had 16, and you've had a couple guys who've had 13, I think. So Merab, you know, he's chasing glory. And by the way, he wants to stay active. He wants to fight bantamweights. He's a promoter's dream. He really, really is. So who should be next for Merab? Well, there really isn't anyone. There really isn't anyone that I could see beating him. But, you know, Corey Sandhagen, I think, is deserved of one. Pierre Dion, Marcus McGee, winner of that. I think if Umar Nurmagomedov takes on Song Yedong, I think the winner of that. I think you should just keep feeding these guys to Merab and let's keep having Merab defeat these guys because truly, Merab has been on absolute tear. An absolute tear. His resume is insane. Sean O'Malley, Umar, Sean O'Malley, Henry Cejudo, Pierre-Jan, Jose Aldo, Marlon Moraes. I mean, just insane. People are going to say that they still have, Dominic Cruz as a bantamweight goat. As of right now, I think Merab might be my bantamweight goat. He is certainly in the conversation. He's past Sterling. He's past O'Malley. He is past pretty much Peter Young. He's past everyone. I don't think Cody Garbrandt. Yeah, after TJ Dillashaw. Yeah. Merab is the guy. Merab is the absolute guy. And I'm excited to see what is next for him this year. But, I mean, as of right now, guys, Merab is my male fighter of the year. And I don't know who else will be able to contend with that. You know, maybe if Volk could get two title defenses. Maybe even just one more, but Merab, what he's done, the mauling he's put on, I'm definitely going to ride with Merab Dhushali for Fighter of the Year. And yeah, he capped things off with a finish. Amazing work. Amazing work, guys. UFC 316, an overall success, I'll say. An overall success. I will say, you know, it was either finish or boring decision. There was zero in between. You know, people could say Andreas Gustafsson mauling Chaos was entertaining. Quillen Sicilia and Marco Medeiros getting dominant wins was okay. Wayne Kong beating up her opponents was okay, but there was no fight of the night for another card, and I think that kind of hurts. But UFC 316 comes to an end. We have winners, we have losers. I'll be curious to see what is next. If I'm Sean O'Malley, though, maybe a fight at featherweight. Maybe he rematches Aljamain Sterling. Maybe he takes on Yair Rodriguez. I have no idea, to be honest. I really don't know. But we look ahead. We go from Newark, New Jersey, down the coast to Atlanta, Georgia for this upcoming weekend as Kamaru Usman returns to take on Joaquin Buckley. Ooh, Jokey Buckley. He's been cleaned house at welterweight. First, he gets rid of Vicente Luque, then Wonderboy Thompson, then Colby Covington. He's looking to take one more name, and that is the number 5-ranked Kamaru Usman in the men's welterweight division. So that's the main event. Rose Namajunas, Miranda Maverick in the co-main event. You also have Edmund Shabazian, Cody Garbrandt, Mansoor Abdul Malik, Alonzo Medifield, Omar Sy, Paul Craig, Rodolfo Bellotto, Michael Chiesa, Malcolm Wellmaker, Ricky Simone, Charles Jourdain. You got a lot of fun fights on this card. After that, it's the UFC Baku. Then we shall end the month at UFC 317 in International Fight Week, which I am just absolutely juiced for. Absolutely juiced for. And sadly, I don't know if this is true, guys, but we might have lost a fight. I don't know if Daniel Dariush and Rahul Moicano is happening. I hope it is, but as of right now, I don't actually know. Fingers crossed that fight is still on. But that's all we got for today's episode. A lot of fun stuff, guys. Thank you guys so much for listening. So many movies, events, lots of fun stuff going on in the world of entertainment. Everyone, have an amazing week. Have an amazing life. And as always, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.